Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games and promotions, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
Now's the time to plan for the 2015 Sundance Film Festival, taking place January 22nd through February 1st. Find out more by visiting sundance.org/festival.
You can do a lot more than selfies with your smartphone. Come to the first annual Pocket Film Fest, the festival of mobile-made films, in Provo, Utah, October 18th. Go to thepocketfilmfest.com for tickets and more info.
I'm Gavin Sheehan, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an official acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. Today we're going to dive into the Salt Lake comedy scene with two of SLC's finest, Melissa Merlot and Marcus. Melissa Merlot is a stand-up comedian based out of Salt Lake City. She's been working in the local comedy circuit for over 5 years, including taking part in podcasts like The Left Show and The Awkward Hour. She also helped run the Roadkill Comedy Show for a while over at the Complex. Last year, Merlot was voted Best Comedian by the readers of City Weekly for their annual Arty Awards. She joins us here in the studio. Hey, Melissa, how did you get involved with stand-up to begin with?
I always wanted to try it, and I was obsessed with it. When I was little, I'd watch it on cable. They had Evening at the Improv, and there were a bunch of other stand-up shows. Just to date myself a little, in the 80s, stand-up comedy was really big, so it was on TV a lot. And so I got really inspired by that when I was younger. And then as I got older, I just figured, hey, why not? I'll just give it a shot. And I went to one open mic, and I was so terrified that I was gonna suck. I didn't let anybody I know go with me, even my boyfriend at the time. We lived together, and I was like, no, you have to stay home, you can't witness this, because I thought if I went and tried it and did really bad, you know, it's like, at least I tried, I'd never have to do it again, just to get it out of my system. But I went and actually loved it, and I thought I did really well, and so ever since then I just kept doing it.
What was the process for you in writing and creating better material and getting better?
Oh, creating better material, I got more real with it. When I first started, I wrote like a screenplay, basically, because I came from writing poetry, so I was kind of more just write it on paper and then recite everything that you wrote down. And it's great to do that, but you don't really connect with the audience as much if you don't leave it open for some kind of improv, you know. So when I first started doing comedy, it sounded really scripted because I would just go word for word for word like an actor, you know, on stage.
Yeah.
It was just a complete script. But then when I started to open up more to talking to the audience and getting feedback and paying more attention to what they laugh at, then I just gradually my writing got better and it started to get more real because I was writing more from my own life than trying to write like a character or something that I think would be funny. People connect more when you're honest about yourself than they do with, you know, get her done. Which, not that I'm insulting him, because you can make a lot of money being a character on stage, but I care more about connecting with people, so I'd rather just be myself.
Cool. How was it for you going through the stand-up scene in SLC and kind of not just learning the ropes, but getting to know everybody and getting that?
It was kind of fun. I mean, it was neat to meet people who kind of had the same aspirations as I did of, you know, just being funny and stuff. But I was surprised at how big a lot of the egos are, too. It's like, wow. Some people take themselves really seriously. I always joke about how comedians have no sense of humor, but it's true. Like, when it comes to them, not all of them. Some of them are cool, like me, of course. But some of them take it so seriously. You just...
like it's a second job?
Yeah, like it's a second job, and not like it's a second job. It's like royalty. Like, how dare you insult me? Do you know who I am? It's like, come on, take it down a notch. We're comedians, let's have fun with it. But some people just take whatever they do super serious, and good for them.
Nice. Stereotypically, stand-up has kind of been viewed as a boys' game.
Oh, totally.
How does it feel coming up through our scene the way it is, and also like working with other women comedians like Natasha Maurer? And
love Natasha Maurer. Love Taylor Hunsicker.
Taylor.
There's a lot of, I love Rachel Jensen. There's a lot of females that I really like right now. When I started, there were not there were a couple that would show up a few times and then just kind of disappear, you know, so it was mostly guys. I never really had an issue with that because I was raised by my dad, so I have a lot of masculine tendencies anyway, just from my upbringing.
And my masculine voice.
Just kidding. But I don't know. It's one of those things that I just wanted to do comedy. I didn't really care. You know, it's like, and when you do comedy with them, it's like you're all kind of together. And it kind of works out because the guys don't really, they get in competition with other guys because it's like, you know, that's a guy, I'm a guy. But since I was a girl, it's like you're just a different niche, so they don't really get as worried about you. Like, oh, she's not going to be as funny as me. She's just a girl or whatever. So they don't mind having you around.
Does that bother you or do you just kind of like, eh, fuck
no, him. I'm funny. I mean, does that sound really cocky? I'm sorry.
Like, no,
it's never bothered me.
That doesn't bother me at all because I'm the best in the world.
What did I say about their egos? What was that? That's my ego talking. Yeah, it's true though. It's like if you're just confident about what you do, it doesn't matter if people say things like that. Like, oh, she's a girl, she's not going to be funny. It's like, okay, watch me. You know, it's like you just can't let things, like, especially with where things are now in the world, you just can't let things hold you back. If you really want to do it, just go out and do it. Doesn't matter. Most of the guys have been super supportive of it, so it's never really been an issue. It's like, it is a show a lot of times where it's me and a bunch of guys, but it doesn't feel like that, you know what I mean? And I never feel like the token girl, because I don't really have just like, I'm a girl type humor, although I've wanted to do that many times. I'm a girl, periods, and puppy dogs, and lollipops. I'm just kidding, I don't know, I don't even know what... what the stereotype women comedy is. I just know that I'm a girl.
Last year you had won City Weekly's Best Comedian.
Yay!
What was that experience like for you? Like, first being
amazing,
nominated and then winning.
Oh, nominated was just such an honor. It really was, especially alongside with Jay Whitaker, who is now the winner of the party, and Christian Piper. Like, just seeing our names together, I was like, wow, this is so cool, because I love both of them, and it was just really amazing, and I honestly felt like I did not have a chance at all against them. And I was just so happy to have my name up for it. And then when I won, I was just like overwhelmed. I was like, holy cow. And it made a really big difference to me. Like, people are actually taking me seriously. This is great. I was really happy with it.
First woman to win that award, too.
That's so cool.
After well,
that makes me so happy.
After 6 years of it bouncing between Cody and Levi.
No, that's what it always seemed like. It was just kind of passing it back and
forth. Or Cody Johnson and Levi Rounds.
Yeah. Passing it back and forth. But yeah, no, and that's great. Like, I get excited when I see women coming out and trying comedy, because women have a lot of interesting things to say, and I want them to be able to make their voices heard, you know. And a lot of women do in other ways, like with podcasting and stuff. There's a lot of females coming up and doing stuff like that. But stand up, you're all alone on a stage, and you can say whatever you want, which is great. So I always try to encourage when I see other females get up there. And by me winning that award, I think I really can, because I can show them that, you know, and be like, and there were people who were like, why did she win? She's not very funny, blah, blah, blah. I was like, haha, too bad, I won anyway. You know, again with that ego.
How do you feel about the local stand-up scene right now? Like, how we're growing?
Oh my God, I love the local stand-up scene. I just finished doing the Salt Lake City Comedy Carnival, which brought comedians from all over the place to Salt Lake just to perform. And it was set up by Christopher Stevenson, Andrew Jensen, and Jordan Mazziotti. They did such an amazing job. We had so many shows. It was just over one weekend, and it was like crazy how many shows we had each night. And then we'd have one late show every night around like 10, and it was like all the comedians would kind of gather at that show. It was just such a great experience, and it's so cool to see, because I've been doing this for a really long time, it's so cool to see how much like comedy has grown in Salt Lake over the years I've been doing it, because that would never have happened when I started. It was like there was one comedy club and maybe a couple bar shows, and that was it. And now it's just like giant. There's comedy clubs, there's bar shows, you know, it's like, it's crazy. There's so much going on here. I love it.
You've been a part of two podcasts now.
Yes.
The Awkward Hour.
Yes.
As well as The Left Show.
Yes.
How'd you get into doing those?
Awkward Hour, Brian Staker, who hosted it, asked me to do it because he wanted to have a Robin, like from Howard Stern's show, like a girl who just sits there and laughs, you know? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And so I never really met him before we started doing the podcast together. And then when we started doing the podcast together, he was really funny. And I was just laughing anyway. Because he's Brian Staker. So yeah, the Awkward Hour. He's been doing that forever.
He's been doing it like 6 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so I'm just on there sometimes now. We used to be more of a co-host thing when we had more of a weekly show going, but now it's kind of more sporadic. But I do the Left Show. That's a every week show. And I got that show because we had Jeff Bell and John Carter on The Awkward Hour. And so that's how they met me when I was co-hosting on Awkward Hour. And then they asked me to come as a guest on The Left Show. And then I just kept being a reoccurring guest and now a co-host on it. So I really like it.
How's it being a part of a show that's not so much comedy, it's more political?
Oh, I love it. Like, I was really intimidated at first because I thought it was going to be like, congressman, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, just really talking a lot about that, but most of it is reactions to like current events and stuff, so it makes it really fun. And we can swear and say whatever we want, which is even better. I love shows like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wise Guys is kind of the place to go, but in the past 2 years, we've just seen this surge of independent shows and taking over venues that you normally wouldn't go see stand-up in. How is it for you having like an independent circuit in this town, and do you think it's benefiting or do you think it's hindering that now all of a sudden we have all these shows throughout a week as opposed to having like the place to go?
I think it's really benefiting, at least for, well, for comedians and for the audience as well, because they can kind of pick and choose wherever they want to go, you know? So whatever kind of show you want, or if it's just your favorite bar that happens to have a comedy night, which tends to pop up a lot, then you can just go see comedy when you would just regularly go hang out at the bar, you know? So I think it's totally beneficial. The more places to do comedy, the better.
What have you got coming up show-wise for the rest of October and the year?
I am super excited about the K-Town Comedy Show on October 18th. It's a Saturday. I'm not sure the price of tickets yet, but we are going to have one of my favorite comedians, the Alien Warrior, there. And he actually is an alien, so you guys need to come out and see it. He's really awesome. I love aliens, so I'm a big fan. And then that Sunday, October 19th, I'm doing the Always Funny in Salt Lake City showcase at Keys on Main.
It's back.
Yeah, it's back. So that's going to be October 19th, and I think tickets are 10 at the door. I'm not sure, but it starts around 7:32. Come see me at both of those. They're going to be awesome.
Nice. Where can people find your stuff?
Go to melissamerlot.com and you can find all my upcoming shows and all kinds of links and tidbits about me.
Very cool. Thanks for coming and doing this.
Thanks for having me, Gavin. This has been a lot of fun.
I know. So many laughs that That's nobody right. heard because of editing.
Editing is wonderful, isn't it?
I know.
Now's the time to plan for the 2015 Sundance Film Festival, taking place January 22nd through February 1st in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and Sundance, Utah. Be the first to see iconic films like Reservoir Dogs, Memento, and the Oscar-nominated Beasts of the Southern Wild that have all premiered in years past. Find out more by visiting sundance.org/festival.
Hi, it's me, Bill Allred, and if you haven't been listening to my podcast, The Let's Go Eat Show, here's some of what you've been missing.
The cool thing about the Little Chocolatiers is we were able to make some really cool things.
You still get recognized a lot from the show. How often does that happen?
Any little person, you know, we will be confused with. And so, you know, sometimes they'll confuse us with the Roloffs and Little Oregon, People yeah. Big World. They'll confuse us
Actors
with Bill.
And actresses.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so like.
Download the Let's Go Eat Show now. It's available on iTunes and theletsgoeatshow.com.
We're now here with Marcus, who's a stand-up comedian based in Salt Lake City. Longtime fans may know him best as the runner-up on the sixth season of Last Comic Standing back in 2008. Since that time, he's toured the U.S., created two DVD specials, and continues to work on the local comedy circuit with innovative shows and new material. The last time I saw you in this, I saw you with Guy Sidel doing what essentially was a rock revival tour, if you will, where you were singing songs in the key of the person, where it was Chris Cornell or Eddie Vedder.
Right.
How did that get started, and has that died off, or is that still something you do?
No, we still do it. It started as an idea years and years ago. I started moving away from doing impressions because I felt like as an impressionist, even though you can be the best impressionist in the world, unless you have like the thing, like for instance, like Brewer does great impressions, Jim Brewer, you know, he gets to tell these stories where he's like, and I was talking to Jack Nicholson and he said to me, so it works rather than just going, hey, what if Jack Nicholson was here? You know, that you had to find a way to be able to do these. And it just never seemed organic to comedy for me. It always seemed like you were stopping the conversation you were having with an audience through comedy and going, here's a parlor trick I can do.
And I'm sure you were getting tired of being asked to do Christopher Walken.
But the thing is you have to kind of do those. Because I can go, yeah, sure, I can learn new impressions, but I lose my old audience. And if I try to do old voices, I mean, kids today, colleges, these kids were born in the late 90s. They don't know who Jeff Goldblum is. They don't know who half of the people you do are. They think that Robert De Niro was only in Meet the Parents. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing. So you kind of have to go, okay, well, I've got to be broad and general and do the 10 voices that everyone knows. So it was kind of like rejecting that and saying, all right, what else can we do? And me and Guy would spend, I don't know how much time on the road, hundreds of hours going around. He worked with me on these road trips.
Because you guys almost national toured pretty much. Like, yeah. You visited enough clubs to where you could count it as a tour.
Honestly, he went with me on the last to some of the last comic stops, and we would do shows along the way. And now, I mean, Guy is headliner as I am. I mean, he's in L.A. All the time. He's working a lot, so it's hard because when we want to do this show, I have to try to hope he's in town and beg him to do it. But what it basically came down to was he was a musician. I was started off as a singer. I did that years and years ago in local band. We just thought, well, we don't want to write our own songs. We don't want to be a funny guitar duo. You know, what could we do? And so every time we'd sing along in the car, I'd always try to match the voice. It's just a natural thing I do. And we thought, well, what if we learned a bunch of songs and tried to figure out a way to pay homage to all of the things we love, all the great voices? And that's kind of how it came. It was just what if. And then I tried to do it once with like karaoke tracks where it was edited together, and it just didn't work because there was no connection between the music and the performance. It was just, it was going to go whether you needed it to or not.
It felt like a karaoke show.
It's exactly what it did. It was really off, and you didn't know that until you got in front of an audience. And you went, I'm done. And then you go, okay, well, now how do we do this? And Guy figured out how to play, to his credit, man, almost 100 songs, weave them together on acoustic guitar, genres and styles and decades. And it's really impressive. And I would just sing the songs, and we kind of tell stories. And it's progressed. I mean, we've really been able to polish this thing. And when I headline shows, a lot of times what I like to do is we'll kind of split the first 45 minutes of comedy together, and then we'll do like 45 minutes of the music show. So it's really kind of a fun way to break up what I do on stage. And I really enjoy doing it because I love singing, and it's a fun challenge to be able to try to do impressions and try to do voices that you're not just, you know, changing the way you talk. You're changing the way you sing, the way you breathe. You're singing from your face. You're singing from your chest. You know, it's just, it's a fun challenge. And so that's, I think, what we're, you know, what you kind of get into is, instead of, you know, what's easy, what can I do that's going to make it more challenging for me?
How does the audience respond to that? Because I'm sure many come in probably with an impression of what you do, either you're seeing you online or they remember how you used to be, and then they have this in the middle of the show. Like, just an unexpected surprise.
Right.
What's the response like when they get a look at it?
I think that same thought every time, that, you know, there's this audience and in the middle of a show, we kind of from dusk till dawn, you know what I mean? Like we're the Gecko Brothers, and then halfway through we're vampire killers. And that's what's so cool about the show is, and we kind of, you know, I kind of just lead him in and we bring Guy back up and we start off and there's enough humor. And that's what's so good about it is that with Guy up there, I have such a natural connection with him as a friend that when we talk on stage, this banter we have, the fun we have is real. There's enough joking. It's kind of like Penn and Teller of musical impressions. There's enough of this stuff that we do that I think the audience gets it. You know, it's not just us going, and for our next trick, we shall do this voice. It really progresses, and it's funny when you start a song and you get the face or you get the stance of somebody and they anticipate it, they can see it, or you hear the reaction. And, I mean, by the end of it, most times, we've got the whole audience singing along. We got them clapping, cheering. They're, you know, they're finishing the lines for us. It's awesome. It's a real interactive thing, and I think that's what comedy should be. So, I mean, so far, it's only benefited the show. It's really different. You should come and see it. We're actually going to be doing it at my next few shows. I'm in Ogden on October 10th and then West Valley Wise Guys the 17th and 18th. And guys going for all three of those shows. So we're actually going to, we have a bunch of new stuff we're working on. I mean, this is genres that range everywhere from Sinatra to Korn. You know, we do everything from Jay-Z to Tom Jones. I mean, there's country, there's funk, it really is everything. I think the best part about it is we pick songs that, like, you're going to be singing for a few days. Like, it's that kind of fun show. And it's all acoustic and just intimate and fun, so, I mean, it really is a cool experience. I love doing it.
Over the past few years, I've noticed you've gone from being, like, the notable local comedian that's been the opener to, like, second to last before whatever touring national comes through. There's very few locals that earn that spot. I can only think of a handful of names here that have earned that, where it's not like somebody didn't come to town and they brought their backup.
Right, right.
How's it been for you to kind of escalate into that position where it's not so much that you're the local novelty, but you are kind of one of the go-to players?
Wow, that's very nice to say. I think I'm just in a very fortunate position. You know, I think a lot of people, when they had the opportunity to do television like I did with Last Comic, and I can speak for the people that I was on the show with, the ones that weren't already in LA, they moved to LA, and that's what they wanted to do. They headed there, and for better or for worse, some of them have had some great opportunities, and for all of them, they've been able to mix in and meet with some really amazing people. But it's also a much, you know, and this is just my opinion, and everything I say really is only, I can only speak for what worked for me. But what I see is that it's a much harder place. You know, you can be there 10 years and still just be the 5-10 minute guy up front. And if Dane Cook or Dave Chappelle or somebody else walks in the room after you're done or before you go, it's not about you. They're not going to remember you. A lot of famous people come through. You're going to meet a lot of famous people and work with a lot of famous people. But you're still scratching and fighting in every single minute. It's very competitive. And I think that works for some people. For me, I love this place. I love Utah, and I've been a Utah, and I still live here, and Wise Guys to me is one of the greatest places on earth, because you look at Wise Guys and you can look at their lineup. I mean, it's over the last 5 years, I've been able to spend entire weekends working with guys like Bill Burr, Dave Attell, Jim Brewer, Brian Posehn, Brian Callen, Tom Green, Tommy Chong, Harlan Williams, Joe Rogan. You know, I mean, the guys I've been able to, Bill Bellamy, I mean, the people I've been able to see and meet and talk to and watch perform, even if I wasn't on the show, I mean, what other state am I going to be the guy that they call to the day of when Chappelle comes through? I mean, I got to open for Dave Chappelle. That was insane. That happened 2 hours before the show, and it was just one of those things where I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm on it. Please. You know, and it's because I think, you know, I've been here, and I've developed who I am, and I've kind of grown as a comic. And I think that's one of the one things that a lot of comics don't ever consider, is that they think to themselves, you know, it's about going out and finding as many places I can get up on stage and starting my own show so I can be on stage for a half an hour. The goal should really be to craft yourself so that you are available and ready for every situation. If you get a chance to audition, it's like 2 minutes. You gotta learn to be funny for 2 minutes. You can go, anybody can be funny in 25 or 30, but there's a reason why you start getting 3 minutes and you work your way up to 5 minutes and 10 minutes. It's because each of those are little segments that you can reach from. It's not just this blathering art form. I probably could have spent a lot of time in LA getting up on every night in clubs, and that would have been another path I could have taken. I chose to stay here. I've stayed pretty busy in doing the things that colleges and things like that, and I've had the ability to work with some awesome comics and also explore other aspects of what I want to do, things like production and creating a series and working on stuff like that. So, you know, it's really just given me a lot of opportunities being here in Utah that I wouldn't have had other places. I wouldn't have had the access to all of the amazing radio stations and local papers that know who I am and reach out and say, hey, we know you, we want to. That's awesome, you know, that we have such a tight-knit community full of people who want to support each other. And to me, I love being part of it, and I love seeing how many young comics are coming up and how they're, I mean, it's just awesome. It's just a really cool place to be, and I just don't, no matter what happens, I don't think I'll ever not be part of this scene.
Yeah. And you touched on a topic I wanted to hit with you, where in the past 5 years, like since you've come out, our underground circuit mm-hmm. has just blossomed.
Sure.
And as much as Wise Guys is the hotspot, now you have a bunch of smaller venues
yeah.
where people can go and practice their craft and essentially have built a secondary scene underneath what was already a popular scene.
Sure.
What's your take on how that's grown and the impact that scene has had?
I think honestly, when you start getting a boom, it really just makes it good for business in the sense that now you have to step your game up. Because instead of 5 dudes at the club on your back, there's 50 dudes. And that's really how it should always feel. You know,
like if you screw up, there's just 10 people waiting to take your
spot.
Right,
and I mean, that's really what comedy is. I mean, you can't ever think it's you. I mean, you can't ever have an ego about comedy. You shouldn't have an ego about anything, but especially comedy, because that mic's going to be on that stage. Those people are going to be in those seats, and yeah, maybe they came to see you, but chances are you can put a mic on a stage and 100 people are going to sit down if they know laughter's going to happen. So if you don't do your set, or if you don't do, somebody else will. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. They're not just going to go, well, Marcus stopped doing comedy, I guess we're done. No, I mean, somebody's going to be there. Years and years ago, I headlined Gotham in New York, and Jerry Seinfeld stopped by the club.
I heard this story.
And well, it was one of those things where, like, that night, you know, he just wanted to come in and work on material. And I sat in the back as the guy whose show it was, whatever that means, watching Jerry Seinfeld read notes and work on material, and it was like that moment you went, okay, well, if that's what he's doing, if that's what Louis was doing every night, and Chris, and these guys who are at the top of their game, how dare you think for one minute that you should ever relax?
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. I think that these other scenes are great if people understand what they're there for, that they are there to train you to be a comic. You should never, there are some people, and I think that they have the wrong idea, when they say, I'm gonna go start my own show to spite a club. That to me is dangerous, because what you're doing is you're saying, well, in spite of the restrictions I'm gonna have, I can't be a comic if you're not gonna let me drop the F-bomb and say the C-bomb 9 times in 2 minutes. That's who I am. Well, okay. But you honestly understand that, number one, that's never going to get anywhere. It's not going to get you on Fallon or Conan. You're going to have to become a TV-friendly comic at some point. You're going to have to learn to be that person. And also, there's things that happen in a club. I mean, if you're going to be a touring comic and you want to make money, and I mean, that's really what this comes down to, is that there's a lot of people who say they're something. But, like, I really think that you're not that thing till you get paid to do that. You know, I could say, hey, I'm a writer. Because I write. Nobody's ever paid me to write a book. I'm practicing to be a writer, and I would love to be that. Right now, I'm a waiter who's hoping to be a writer, and I work on my craft. That's the way to say it. But to say I'm a comedian, well, but you're not. You're a guy who's funny, who started his own show, who has the same 40 people in the same place every week. What you're doing is you're setting yourself up to fail, because if you were to ever get in a club, it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different setting. You have to understand that people are eating and drinking, and there's going to be a time when their checks go down, and there's going to be a time when you have to turn the room. You have to know what the light means. You have to know how to balance a room. You can't alienate your audience. You're not just getting hired once. You're getting hired a bunch of times. You want to come back to the club. You have to understand that they're your boss. They're the reason. If you can't just go in and say, my comedic integrity will not be compromised, and just say that. You know, I mean, once you get to a point, you can say whatever you want. I've been, you know, that's one of the things
that's
that kills me about people and Wise Guys.
That's when you turn to Louis C.K., who's like the only comic I've known besides Chris Rock who's been able to run a foul streak on TV and be a success at it.
Well, but even then, I mean, he's not so super, super, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's one of the things that that kills me about when people used to hate on wise guys and they go, well, you can't swear. Well, sure. I mean, if you're an open mic guy, you got 30 dudes on the bill. There's 3 minutes. They don't want you going in there. Clearly, nobody should. No club in the world would want you going in and going, you know, FFCC, and then I was, That's not comedy. That's you trying to get a really horrible reaction. That's not you trying. That's you going for the single most common denominator. You say booger to a 3-year-old, he's gonna laugh. Doesn't mean it's funny.
Yeah.
So what I think comedy clubs do is try to cultivate comedians, people who, you can't be filthier than your headliner. You have to understand, if they're gonna put you up for 5 minutes before a big headliner, even if he's Jim Norton and he's gonna swear all night, your job is not to do that. It's just that a lot of people don't realize that the way that clubs and things are set up is to help comics succeed, be better comics. And that's what every room should be. And so if you go out there and you open a room because your goal is to get people up and get them practiced and get that time on stage is so vital for a comic, that's awesome. But if you do it so that you can go out there and say whatever you want, have no rules because screw the man, well then the man pays you. The man's who writes checks. So if you just want to be a guy who does something for free for 10 years to maintain your integrity, that's awesome. Some people say that it's selling out, but I mean, I guess Richard Pryor, Louis C.K., George Carlin, all the people you've heard of, they sold out because, you know, that's what it means to sell out. They sell out arenas, they sell out places, you know their name, they're on TV, they have their own TV shows. People cite people all the time. George Carlin was a genius. George Carlin was in Bill and Ted's. Okay? I mean, think about all the crazy, crappy movies that your heroes have been in. Think about Patton Oswalt. He was a hero of the underground comic scene after he was on King of Queens. You have to have a credit. People aren't just going to come see you because you're the funny guy in the bar. At some point, if you want to be a comic, you're going to want to get paid for it, and you're going to want to proceed to the next level. And so I think that the local scenes are great if they're all trying to work to a goal of becoming the best comics they can in the industry that exists today.
You've done the two specials, as we talked about, that second to last guy, that, you know, the big the big name. What's next for you? Like, what do you want to do with your current career? Where do you want to take it?
Well, for the last couple years, I've been working on a series that I produce and host. And to be honest, I really love production. I've had a fascinating couple years being able to sit down and learn how to film and color correct and edit and you know, and it's really, like I said, you know, as a comic, that's what we do. We look at a bigger picture, a narrative, and we say, I'm going to start here, I'm going to end here. This is the story I'm going to tell you tonight. It's going to take me 60 minutes to tell this story, and throughout this story, where there's going to be things that are established, and I will touch on them throughout the night. And that's really the premises of your comedy. I'm getting older, I'm married, I like to smoke pot. And these are sections of my show. And then and then all of the jokes or the references fit under those greater narratives. They trickle down, and then you have callbacks and this and that, and then that's the story you tell. When I go out and I film, coming back and taking 8 or 9 hours of footage and finding a 45-minute story is like kid in a candy store. You know, you're just watching it and going, oh, okay, I see, this is A, and we're gonna go to B, but you gotta get here, but we need a bridge, okay. It's just so much fun to be able to do, and I've worked on the show for a couple years, and it's picked up a nice little following, and we've actually got some interest from some production companies that we're partnering with and hoping to get in front of a network soon, within the next few weeks is the plan. I would love to be able to make the show. I would love to be able to produce and write and eventually kind of start overseeing other projects. I've started a production company called Red Drum Productions. It's a lot of fun. And that's our horror, which is kind of what our series is. It's a scary series. And then we're actually also starting a comedy production company. So, you know, we'd like to shoot specials and, you know, do stuff for comics and be able to produce real high quality stuff locally and then hopefully eventually nationally. You know, because I feel like, you know, from a comedian standpoint, I get the edit. I understand what we're doing. Production and producing things makes a lot of sense to me. So that's probably what I'll do. Hopefully we'll be able to keep making the show.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, please visit slugmag.com. Send us your suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by myself, Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, and John Ford. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd and technical design by Kate Colgan. Join us next week as we'll have artists Kat Palmer and Trish Empey in the studio talking about the work they'll have on display at the Art Access 2 group exhibition happening this month. Thanks for listening.